listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello there, and welcome to All Things Therapy. I'm your host, Lisa Tahir, and I welcome you whether you are watching through Facebook Live or later on Instagram when I post this video. I am delighted to be with you today. It is episode number 242, and next week I'll be doing a solo show sharing with you my 5-year anniversary episode. I had no idea when I began this journey into podcasting in 2015 that I would still be doing it 5 years later and loving it more and more with each passing year. If you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, please do that. And I'd really love some more written reviews. It helps a lot when you take that time to give a star rating and written review. So please do that for me on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on iHeartRadio, wherever this is coming to you. That would really mean a lot to me. And if you want to work together doing virtual therapy sessions, reach out through my website, which is nolatherapy.com. It's the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy.com, as I live and work in both places. I'm in Los Angeles this week. I'll be back to New Orleans next week. It's been wonderful to be back in LA in the energy and the sun and just seeing places reopen and people about their commerce. It's just been really wonderful. And additionally, at Nola Therapy, you can order my new book endorsed by His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, having to do with self-forgiveness and empathy and healing our deepest vulnerability and core wounds. And I want to make a segue into my guest today because she's doing something so unique. I was just sharing with her that I learned a lot in preparing for this episode. So transformative technologies are medically and scientifically validated technologies that support mental health, emotional well-being, and human joy. And it's really about amplifying our humanity, which I had never really heard it spoken that way until finding my guest's work. Today, we are with Nicole Bradford. She's a leader, a world leader in transformative technologies. She's the CEO and founder of the Willow Group, as well as the executive director and co-founder of the Transformative Technology Lab and Conference. So Nicole's mission with her company through her work is to permanently move 1 billion people into a state of fundamental well-being and flourishing by 2030. And she's also the author of a book called Sisterhood. And today we're going to talk about how Nicole is doing this and what even transformative technologies are. So with that, I want to welcome you, Nicole.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. You know, so my mother's family is from New Orleans.
Oh my gosh, that is so
yeah.
Awesome. Do you go to New Orleans?
You know, I haven't been there in a long time, but they live in Metairie.
Oh, yeah, Metairie. My sister lives in Metairie. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they live in Metairie. Okay, great.
Oh, awesome. Well, come on down and let me know. Come down south.
Great. Well, I so appreciate being on your show. You know, in 5 years is really such an accomplishment, and really also the work that you do in helping people, you know, really sort of, you know, adjust and process and you know, and grow through, you know, the challenges that we all have in our lives. So, you know, thank you for the work that you do.
You're welcome. I really appreciate that. Thank you for sharing that with me. And Nicole, I'm wondering where you would like to start us, because I have various topics and questions, but I didn't know if a place I've watched some of your YouTube interviews. Where do you want to start us with transformative technologies?
I think a really great place to start is just the definition of what it is and why we need it.
Yes, I love that.
You know, the thing about transformative tech and what it is, just put really simply, is that it's technology that helps us with the human experience. Okay. And so, and by human experience, I mean, you know, our experience of life. So dealing with stress, anxiety, depression, happiness, loneliness, connection, dealing with, you know, being able to work on teams and connect to other people and to solve problems together. And also with, you know, the ability to find our purpose and our meaning and really fulfill our potential also, you know, whether it's our cognitive potential or our emotional potential. And many people don't realize or think about technology as something that could play a role in that, but it's true. And so, you know, and then the second part is why would we need these types of things? And you know, I think just to tell a really basic story, you know, there, one of the things that has happened with COVID is that there isn't anyone in the world who doesn't know someone or themselves who hasn't had a hard time over the last year.
Yeah.
Like everybody knows that person, whether it's themselves or their parents or their children or a friend or someone at work, everyone has been challenged. And one of the things that we've seen is that there aren't enough Lisas. Mm. Like there aren't enough therapists for all of the people in the world who need support. And so another way to think about transformative technology are technologies that, you know, help people in between seeing someone like you, or that also give you superpowers so that you're able to, you know, help that many more people. And so that, you know, you're really supported in the work that you do. And so transformative technology is really about, if you imagine Maslow's hierarchy.
Yes.
Most technology that you can imagine, and certainly like our computers and the way that we use technology, is those bottom two levels. But transformative technology is really about all of the higher levels of Maslow's hierarchy. Okay. Technology that helps us with our self-awareness, our belonging, and ultimately even our transcendence to the place where, you know, we realize that, you know, a lot of the things that we use to feel whole are unnecessary.
You know, that causes me to think about, I know you talk in your work about the value of making meaning of our lives, meaning and purpose. And I'm thinking the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which in the traditional sense has to do with food, clothing, shelter, our basic physical needs, and how you've overlaid transformative technologies onto that paradigm, on that pyramid, but the higher executive functioning of finding meaning and the technologies that support us to do so. Is that an accurate part of this?
Yeah. Well, so like the first two levels of Maslow's hierarchy, the bottom level is physiological. Then above that is safety needs. So this is like food, shelter, all of that stuff. But there's four levels above it. There's love and belonging, self-esteem, so how you see yourself, and then, you know, the self-actualization.
Okay.
And then actually above that, many people don't know that Maslow actually had another level. He just didn't publish it as widely. Okay. Is when he published his initial theory called self-transcendence. And so self-transcendence is basically, you know, after you've self-actualized, it's when you realize that you don't need the self that you actualized anymore, that you sort of let all of it go.
Wow.
So self-actualization is when you, like, you really learn how to play the game to become, you know, to actualize the things that you want to create in the world. And then there's a big amount of self around it. And then self-transcendence is when you realize that you don't actually need to play the game anymore.
That is so interesting. And I haven't looked at that hierarchy in so many years. So I definitely want to revisit that and see what you're speaking about.
Yeah. And also the way that we divide it too, if you think about the hierarchy, love and belonging, esteem and self-actualization, it's also the way we line it up is heal, grow, and prosper.
Okay.
So that could be, you know, love and belonging. There's a lot of healing in that. And esteem, there's a lot of growing in that. And prospering, there's a lot of self-actualization in that. Mm-hmm. And the overall opportunity for products in this category, it's over $4.2 trillion for wellness and well-being. So that is sort of like the market opportunity for it. Yeah. And it's really just getting started.
You know, I looked where you talk about the piece of around your transformative technology lab and TransTech 200, the key innovators who are developing science and technology that's significantly impacting mental health and emotional well-being for the positive. And I saw like 1440 Multiversity, which is a place that many of my colleagues and friends have taught at. How did you even get involved in this, Nicole? Because it's a really unique way of looking at things that I think we see and utilize, like even meditation apps, which I imagine fit into transformative technologies.
Absolutely. You know, and absolutely meditation apps fit in, you know, thank you for asking that. I actually did come at it through meditation is how I arrived in this. And so my story is that I spent a significant amount of time in the video game business. And I love video games. And I was living in China, and I was managing operations. I was leading operations for a company called Blizzard Entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's also known for making World of Warcraft, StarCraft, Diablo, some of the most recognizable and most loved brands in digital entertainment. So I was doing that in China, and I was having a ball, honestly. It was a wonderful role, and I had a really active social life, and I my apartment was in the New York Times. And
wow.
Yeah, you can look it up. My apartment was in the New York Times, and I just started, crazily enough, I fell in love with martial arts and combat sports. So I just started fighting.
Awesome.
You know, and I was playing, I learned how to, the same year that I had my first fight, I also learned how to ride and play polo at the same time. So I was just like, I was having a great life.
Yeah.
Then I had a break, like a month off to, between one role and another. And so I went on a meditation retreat.
Okay.
And I went on this retreat with the seriousness of, or the casualness of something, because I had it bookended in between getting scuba certified in Thailand.
Yes.
And going to Bhutan. Like I really, Very it cool. was really like, I'm just going to do these three things. I have a month off, you know, and I had a really powerful experience.
Okay.
I had it was a Vipassana meditation retreat, mm-hmm. and I had an incredibly powerful, powerful experience. And on the other side, I felt deeply connected, like so connected to everyone. And then also I felt fearless and extremely happy. And mostly, you know, I know now it was because I had a dramatic decline in what's called rumination. So okay. inner chatter. So yeah. that inner voice that, you know, usually tells us horrible things and
yes.
how everything's going to go wrong. That voice was silent. And it turns out when that voice is silent, you know, your inner chatter, you get really happy and mm-hmm. you get pretty unafraid. And so with that, I just really wanted everyone to have that. And I loved technology. And eventually I said, these two things go together. It makes sense. So I stayed with Blizzard for about another year. And then I moved to San Francisco because it was one of the places, one, I always wanted to live here. And two, it's one of the places where technology and consciousness really intersect.
Come together, yes. Mm-hmm.
And so there were lots of people who were into what I was into. However, in 2015, I was still, you know, I was still talking about things that people didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
Well, just, you know, the radical idea. It's a radical idea that you can use technology for the inner landscape. Remember, this was like, this was pre-Calm, you know, having a $2 billion market cap or valuation, excuse me. This was pre-people saying, oh, you can use things in this way. So in 2015, you know, I was, you know, like, I was crazy. Like, people were like, I was ahead of my time. 2015, it was odd. 2016, it was odd. 2017, it got interesting. 2018 was the year that people really started to shift stigma on depression, because there were just so many high profile cases of people where, you know, people thought that, wow, that person has absolutely everything.
Yes.
And they were either admitting to having depression, especially a lot of men, which was just, it was so important for the world that men start to say when they're having a hard time. And then there were, you know, some of those high profile suicides that were really unexpected. And that's when the stigma started to change on, okay, how do we, like something's going on. And so then, you know, the idea of, you know, digitally delivered solutions to support therapists and caring for people. A lot of the companies that, you know, you see doing really well right now, they were started around that time period.
Okay.
And so in 2018, it was, oh, there's something here. I still had to talk a lot. 2019 was the shift. And that's when, you know, meditation started really expanding. You know, stigma was declining. And, you know, the other thing that happened was that there were a lot of the proliferation of sensors. So the technology started to arrive and get much better.
Okay.
And also AI or machine learning also had a big surge in 2018, 2019. So what was doable, you know, there was a lot more. And then 2020, we all know what happened to all of us. I think I saw a stat that was like in June of the year, the CDC did a study and estimated that 25% of Americans were experiencing some kind of depression or emotional issue.
I believe that at a minimum, even of what was reported.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you see happen in, you know, in the therapeutic communities? Like, what were you hearing happen for people in 2020? A lot of cases, right? A lot more people looking for you, trying to get your help.
Well, I remember very specifically when the first pandemic first occurred last March, that there was actually a sharp decline in my clients, that people seemed to really like the fight, freeze, fear, fight, you know, that response to stress, to something that overwhelms our central nervous system, that people, you know, just stopped everything. And I was really surprised, because I thought, oh my gosh, this is a time to be talking about your experience. And I had a sense, because that happened during Hurricane Katrina also, when I was in New Orleans, that at first people just pulled back and stopped, almost like to regroup, to have a sense of like, what is even happening here? And then within a few months after that decline, I had a really big surge of old clients coming back, new clients coming into therapy, where I think people started to see this isn't going away, that we really have to start finding new systems of coping and new ways of living. And so people started to reach out again. So that was really interesting. Yet when I reflected on Hurricane Katrina and that mass destruction of the Gulf South, I remembered it was similar. So, and I've been doing Zoom therapy, Skype, and FaceTime for over 10 years. So a lot of my clients had already been utilizing those modalities with me. So I felt really prepared in that way. What it was definitely the balance of how to maintain my own experience of what was happening while serving others and having to take really good care of myself, really walk my talk, and so I could be of value.
That's great. Like, you were really ahead of your, I love that, Lisa, that you were already ready for it, because you had already embraced, you know, technology as one of the many tools that you can use in supporting the people who, you know, have entrusted themselves to, work with you.
Thank you for that. Wonderful. Thank you. I also started, since my book wasn't published yet, it was coming out in November of 2020. I felt like I needed something to do that was positive besides just sitting around waiting for clients to schedule. So I actually started reading sections of my book on Instagram and on Facebook and in, say, like 8-minute segments. And there was such a positive response to that, to just be able to offer something of value to people during this time and just not charging for it, just putting the content of my book out. So I remember that helped me feel really good, and it helped a lot of others too. So that was very awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can give you some specific examples, since probably, you know, much of your audience is really interested in, you know, in therapy and therapeutics and psychology and that sort of thing.
Please.
Yeah. So some of the things that people are doing that are so interesting is, I try to think about it, and I encourage you know, people in the caring professions to think about technology as a aid, and, you know, much as you have, Lisa. And so I try to think about it like pearls and thread. So imagine a pearl necklace that has pearls, and then the thread. The pearls are far apart, you know, as opposed to being booked up against each other.
Okay.
And in this example, you, Lisa, are the pearl, and the technology is the thread that comes before and comes after. So it can do things like help a person be ready to meet you, you know, help a person get ready for the moment so that when they are sitting with you, they are able to make the most of the moment. And then on the other side, it's helping someone with the integration and the understanding of what they realized in their conversation with you. So a specific example might be often, you know, what I hear from a therapist is that, you know, it's like people, you know, human memory is actually just not that good. And there's lots of examples. Like, there's so many studies, like the gorilla in the background study, you know, and what do people remember, and witness studies, like what do people actually remember? And so, you know, people often, when they're dealing with something, they don't necessarily remember exactly what happened before it, what happened after it, what was going on, where were they, what did they eat, did they get enough sleep? Mm. Like, what are all of the things that are around it? And so, you know, one of the things that technology can do is it can help us capture the context of when we were triggered, you know, what was going on. And so, you know, there's a reason, to give a really simple example, there's a reason why food journals work. Because when you write down what you eat, you actually notice what you're eating, and, yes. You know, and you remember what you ate. You know, so it's really yes. simple. It lets you notice it. So technology can be really great for, say, you're working with someone on social anxiety, you know, for them to notice when they're feeling something, and then to just, like, you know, make a note on their phone or in an app of, like, what's going on. It's happening now.
Yes.
Or, you know, technology can be used to, in the moment, for the clients that you have that relationship with, for them to, in an app with you, push a button. And if you're available, it go into video chat. And so you can actually help them in the moment.
Yes.
You know, because it's, if a week later they're coming in and say, oh, maybe Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, I felt anxious. You have to do so much work to get them back to the moment where you can have that teaching experience moment allows them to have a breakthrough.
Yes.
Yeah. So technology can do that. And then also post. So one of my favorite products is one called Feel. And I love it because it really is, you know, it really works with therapists. And so it's a cognitive behavioral therapy product. And it's a wristband that has heart rate variability, skin conductivity, and another sensor. And what it does is there are physiological signals that happen when people go into a stress response. And so when people get stressed, their heart rate variability changes. And so what this does is it actually starts with a therapist who's teaching CBT around a particular problem, whatever the person has. And the therapist, you know, identifies what the problem, does the debrief, I mean, does the teaching of the CBT, and then gives the person the bracelet.
Okay.
And so the bracelet tracks, it's an 8-week program. And so on a weekly basis, it's actually pulling every day, all the time, their biological signals. So they can see, you know, when they're get, you know, when it's getting stressed, what happened, what was around. Because it's also a visual reminder, they remember to use the CBT, because you can teach someone something and then they forget to use it in the moment. Oh, I should have asked that question. I should have been generative, you know, in that conflict or something. But they have it on their wrist, so it reminds them to use what Lisa has taught them. It's tracking their data so you and they can later on look at the data and say, and you could be like, oh, you got really stressed on Thursday. What happened? Oh, I don't think anything happened. And then you could be like, no, look at your calendar. You were really stressed on Thursday. And they go, oh, yeah, my boss said such and such kind of thing. So there's that. And it's this 8-week program. And what I love about it, too, is that it isn't designed for them to use it forever. It's designed to give them, equip them with a power up and give you another modality to teach people CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, around the issues that they have. And so the goal is to train them and skill them, and then the bracelet comes off. But by the end of 8 weeks, and the studies, the clinical studies of this therapist plus technology in a program, it's highly efficacious.
I bet.
Highly efficacious. And so that's a great example of transformative technology, where technology is the thread around the pearl, which is the therapist and client relationship.
Okay, that was really helpful, Nicole, to break it down with a specific technology. Thank you for that. And I feel like I want to ask you, because it's something I read about a bit, and I don't have full understanding of the role of AI and how that is helping us and will help us. I listened to Deepak Chopra talk about like his avatar, and I'm just curious about what is coming there for us.
Yeah, I mean, AI is going to touch every aspect of every life. But some of the things that it's really good at is pattern recognition. And those pattern recognitions can be in data. It can be in what you typically think of as data. It can be in numbers. It can be in words. Like AI can read Wikipedia and notice how many times people are using I versus we in conversation. So it can be used in words. It can be used in, it's starting to be able to be used in biosignals. So, everything from emotion, recognition, so facial expressions, to voice. So, the ability for computer hearing and then the AI that's with it to understand patterns. It's beginning to be things where you can pick up emotion and voice, but also you can AI and computer hearing can hear things like the very earliest stages of Parkinson's shows up in the tonality of the voice. So people who are working on emotion recognition for call centers started to notice that they could actually hear medical conditions as well. These are the companies, not the CS reps. And so, so essentially the way to really think about it, about AI, the simplest way to think about AI is its ability to recognize patterns at minor level or at really tiny levels that go below, humans' ability to hear, see, smell. For everyone is that's one of my favorite is, there's a whole group of people. This is a little bit of a tangent, but it's fun.
It's okay,
and helps with the story. There's a whole group of people who are using AI to understand animal communication.
I think I might have seen something in this genre. Yes, I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so it turns out there's things like, you know, cows. Cows have individual moos that they introduce themselves with when they meet new cows.
That's now, awesome.
And humans would never be able to know that because all moos sound the same. And is it something that, you know, what does it mean? Does it mean the same thing to us that it means to them? Probably not. But, you know, if we ever start to be able to understand animal language to the extent that we understand that they have names for each other, probably would change, you know, a lot of human behavior about how we treat animals. And so it really is AI and computer sound, computer vision, you know, computer sensing. Which is powered by AI, allows humans access to granular and minute, patterns, and then those patterns are the beginning of prediction.
Okay, that makes sense. I saw something having to do with farming and pigs, like measuring the happiness of pigs on a particular farm by using AI in the video that could then translate, like you said, the sounds of the pig, their facial expressions. And I just thought that was so interesting. And what a great use of technology that's happening.
Yeah, the things that are about to happen, like one of the things that I really love is a category called haptics. Okay. And what haptics are is it's basically, you know, our largest organ is actually our skin.
Yes.
You know, our largest organ is our skin. And people don't really think that much about it the way they think about their eyes or their ears or something. But our skin, you know, is a very large surface area. And so there's some, you know, really cool things that I'm excited about. There's a product called the Sound Shirt. And okay. Basically what it is it's a haptic shirt that you wear and it picks up music and puts music on the skin.
Wow.
Yeah. But the reason why that's important is imagine like, so who's your favorite music artist? Like, who do you love the most?
I really like Ariana Grande.
Oh gosh, me too. I love her.
Yes.
She that's another story.
Okay, yeah.
You know, but I love her. One of her songs was recently very, very helpful to me. Yeah, she's great. So imagine being at an Ariana Grande show and having on a Sound Shirt and feeling the heartbeats of, say it's a stadium with 30,000, the Superdome. You know, 30,000 people. Imagine being able to feel their heartbeats on your skin while you were watching Ariana Grande. And so that would be a transcendent experience. Mm-hmm. That would be something that you can't do without it. And it would be something that amplifies what happens already. So one of the things that many people don't know happens already is that human beings buy biosignals sync when we are in connection with one another. Mm-hmm. And also, there have been multiple studies that have shown that, for example, when people are watching theater together, the people who are in the rows together, their breathing starts to sync, their biosignals start to sync as they're watching what's on stage. So we already deeply connect to one another. And if you think about it, it makes sense. We have a lot of it's only recent in the course of human history that it's really possible for a human being, any human being, to survive on their own. It is only recent. It's only a few thousand years old, but we've been here for a very long time.
Yeah.
And before that, human beings required, like to survive, you had to be with other human beings. So we are highly attuned to each other. We very much want to be together. We're very, very connected, and we have a lot of natural systems that make that so. And so one really interesting role of technology is to amplify those natural systems so we can be more deeply connected. Now, where, you know, people like yourself come in is helping us have skills in emotional fluency so that time that we spend together can actually be good.
Yes.
And so that comes back again to pearls and thread.
Okay. Absolutely. Nicole, there's something you spoke about when I watched an interview you were giving that I wanted to ask you about, because the way that you spoke it like really resonated with me. And I was curious to hear more, where you spoke about the decay curve of gratitude, because I felt like there was something there as far as gratitude as a practice, as a way of life. We hear about this so much currently, and definitely over the last year, about being appreciative, you know, reframing experience and such. Can you talk to us, what is the decay curve of gratitude?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that question, Lisa, because it's that's a great hack, you know, for everyone listening. So, you know, a fundamental part of being human is the role of novelty in how our psychology and our sort of like how our brains and our minds work. Novelty plays a role. And so, you know, and our brains are also sort of pattern matching, you know, in many ways, and filtering all the time. And so sort of what happens is that if you are grateful for the exact same thing every day, eventually you actually become a little bit less grateful for it. And this is measured by academic grade gold standard measures on, you know, on sort of like, what's the word? Valency on like, okay, you know, like really how good did it make you feel?
Yes.
You were grateful about
emotional
X.
Valence. See, like positive to negative, yeah, or yeah, that scale.
Yeah. And so it's just, it really is just a novelty thing. And so the way to like the thing to do it would be to, you know, be grateful for your health for 3 days. And then on the fourth day, be grateful for something else. And then you can come back to your health again. But it's just really to mix it up so that
yes,
it doesn't become a pattern that then your brain and your body start to disregard.
I thought that was so helpful because I could relate to that. At times in my life, I kept a gratitude journal for years. And I noticed at one point coming back to some of the same things and it didn't feel as powerful. And I kind of wondered, you know, what's wrong here? But it makes sense that the decay curve, that it's about really reaching for new things that we are authentically grateful for. And there is so much. So I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
And what you were speaking about.
And you can go back too. You know, one of the things you'd have to worry about is that if you made Mondays, you know, Health Monday, then it too over time would lose its novelty.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's a way to do it would be to, you know, write all the things that you'd like to be grateful for on little sheets of paper, put them in a bowl, you
oh,
know,
yeah,
and then every day
that,
pick a new one so you don't know which one it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, then you can keep it, then you can keep the order random so
that
you can have maximum gratitude
for love
each
that
one. It's just a little hack.
It is. So in coming to the end of our time, what is next for you? What are you excited about and working on and such? Mm.
Well, one of the things that I really want to see more products in, I want to see more technologies in, is I want to see more tools to help people develop emotional fluency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so whether that is one of my favorite products is that right now is a social emotional learning robot called Moxie. And it's at the very beginning of great products in this, but it's designed to be an ally for parents and a best friend for children. But they got a lot of things right. So one, Moxie sends children on missions. So it's not the source of truth. What it does is it says, you know, like, you know, let's just say, you know, if you have a niece or a nephew named, you know, Mary, it says, hey, Mary, who's your best friend? And then it asks you questions about, it asks Mary questions about how her best friend feels and sends her to her best friend to ask, how do you feel? And then to report that back. So it's the technology isn't the source of truth. The technology is sort of like the inspiration to go and be with other people and to start asking questions and learning emotional fluency. It also does a great job of, it's only operational for 1 hour a day. Okay. So in an on-demand world, it teaches children how to wait and they cannot binge. They also, they did a great job on the security. And so I want to see more products like this because prior to COVID, 90% of teachers K through 12 in the United States wanted social emotional learning content. And there just really isn't anything great out there. Most of the content is teaching teachers how to teach from watching videos
right
online, as opposed to something that really is a tool that teaches emotional fluency. Because that's the key for the future of work. Mm-hmm. That's the key for working well with people, is to be able to connect emotionally. And you cannot connect emotionally to someone else if you cannot connect emotionally to yourself
right.
and understand what your feelings are. And so I think that's like, I want to see more stuff like that.
Okay. And where can people find you, Nicole?
We're at www.transformativetech.org. And then also on LinkedIn, we have a group there. And so people can find us and join, whether they want to use products like this as therapists or as patients. Or, you know, what we really do is we really help people want to build these types of products. Mm-hmm. We help them understand how to build them and to connect with other people who can help them. Because we really like, we need, this is the tech that we really need. This is the tech for good that we really need. We do not need another champagne delivery app. Like, we don't need that. We need technology that helps us, helps us become more deeply human.
Nicole, I love this. Thank you for coming my way. I feel like I learned so much by researching you and your work. And I also found you at NicoleBradford.com.
Yeah.
To offer that to our listeners and viewers.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I look forward to being connected in the future.
Likewise. Thank you, Lisa. And thank you for what you do.
You're welcome. And you.
We need more pearls like you, so thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Have the best afternoon.
Good. Thanks.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
That concludes my show today with Nicole Bradford. Tune in next week. I will be doing a solo show for my 5-year anniversary, episode 243. I'm excited to be with you, and I wish you an awesome week and weekend. All of my love. Bye.
You're listening to All Things Therapy.